Good evening, Daniel. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thanks very much.
Something special about this year, isn't there?
That's right. As I'm sure you are well aware, it's the International Year of Astronomy. Yes. And so that means that there's been loads of things going on internationally celebrating astronomy over the years and recent discoveries especially. So that's what this particular exhibition's about.
So Monash University's got in on this.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we've had a couple of really nice public lectures already that we had a good turnout to. We've got quite a few more to come, and we've been doing some public observing on the roof of the car park afterwards, which people have quite enjoyed. For me, actually, because I work on the theory side, it's the first time I've really surveyed the southern sky with my eyes properly, so the International Year of Astronomy is a good thing for me, too.
Okay, and this exhibition that we're at, could you perhaps walk us around it?
Yeah, sure. So, so it's to celebrate astronomy and, to go through the basics of what astronomy is and to cover sort of recent discoveries and just to learn a few things about, what there is in space. And you can calculate your weight on Jupiter or...
I noticed all those scales. A whole lot of bathroom scales.
Yeah, well, there's special edition bathroom scales, you see. So for depending on whether you want to feel lighter or heavier, so if you're sensitive about your weight, then you should go and stand on the moon. But if you're particularly not sensitive, then you should... going and staying on a neutron star is quite scary.
So the calibrator to read the your mass in different planets.
Sure, well, if we go over here and have a look at the neutron star one. So,
okay. Whoa. And that's about 32. What's that, 32?
That's 32 gigatons.
Gigatons. And now giga is a billion.
That's 32 billion tons, you are.
Wow. Okay, and what's this one here?
So we're on a white dwarf now, which
a white dwarf star.
The remnant of something like our sun when it dies.
And that's reading about 37.
Yeah, so that's 37 kilotons, so 37,000
tons. Okay, well,
so you're getting lighter.
So I go down to Jupiter
so
here.
So something much more normal is Jupiter.
And, yes.
Yep.
Okay, around about 230, 240.
But now you're back in kilos now.
Kilograms, so kilograms.
So right. Only 230
that's
kilos.
That's way better, right. And of course I can stand on the moon and the Earth as well.
Yeah, so
that's
you
fantastic.
Can pick yourself up on Jupiter at least.
So I guess both adults and children have a bit of fun with this one.
Oh, that's right, yeah. We were thinking of selling them afterwards on eBay. Spice up your bathroom.
Yes, I'm sure the moon one will go well as for the Weight Watchers meetings.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, now you've got a whole lot of posters hanging down here. What are these all about?
Well, so here we're covering the basic techniques of astronomy, what's astronomy all about, and how it's developed over the years. So so astronomy is one of the oldest sciences in the world. Ever since people have lived, they've looked up at the stars and wondered and studied them too, taken measurements. And obviously early cultures have many things which are astronomical, such as Stonehenge, a lot of people will know, is to do with predicting eclipses. And so the fact that you recognise sort of patterns and regularity in the motion of the stars and the planets.
So you go right through from the human eye right through to the digital age.
Yeah, so astronomy is all about collecting light. And I suppose most recently, your typical idea of astronomy is what you can see with your eyes, which is the optical wavelength. But actually these days, most of the richness is in the wavelengths that you can't see. So,
hence the saying, the invisible universe.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, it's invisible to our eyes, but it's not invisible to our telescopes.
So how do we go about seeing some of the things we can't actually see then?
Well, so the classic thing is you imagine your infrared goggles and you look at yourself and you can see your heat being given off in the infrared. So as well as the Hubble Space Telescope, there's things like the Spitzer Space Telescope is the equivalent of the Hubble but in the infrared. And that's great for looking at places where the temperature's different. So a different wavelength gives you a different temperature idea. So if you look at the sun in X-rays, then what you see is just the really hot bits. So, and whereas if you look at the sun in the optical, what you see is a quite smooth, round thing that we know about. But in X-rays, you just see the flares and the very, really sort of, exciting things that are very high temperature and high energy. And so if you go down in wavelength, then you tend to see the lower energy things.
Mm-hmm.
So different wavelengths tell you something about the different energies that are given off. So you know, you give off, well, most of your heat is sort of low energy infrared radiation, and so you know, it's the same with stars. Looking in a different band tells you a lot more about what's going on.
Mm. So it's a bit like a hot plate, where the hotter it gets, the brighter it gets, and the more not only just gives out heat, but also visible light.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah, I mean, stars and astronomical things give off a lot more, in a lot more wavelengths too. And of course, the other technique, which is not so, it's not so easy to grasp, I suppose, is to study the spectrum of light. So it's to study there's very specific wavelengths in the light, say from the sun or from any astronomical object, which are missing. And so if you take this, you know, the light from the sun and you spread it through a prism and you look at it on the wall or something, well, you need a very good prism and a very white wall, but you can actually see there's very thin strips that are missing from the light. And those strips tell you a lot about what a thing's made of, because they correspond to very specific things that happen in atoms. So, you know,
so each atom has its own particular spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the DNA of a star, if you like. You know, you can see what it's made of, you can see the elements in it, you can measure them, you can see how fast things are moving, because these spectral lines get a Doppler shift, so you can see if something's moving towards or away from you. So, I mean, spectroscopy, as it's known, is one of the most powerful techniques in astronomy. But, of course, the pictures are very dull. Because
yes.
all you get is a line with a few dimples in it.
And talking to school children, I've often referred to these diagrams we've got in front of us here as the barcode of the elements.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
So each element has its own particular barcode. And by looking at that, you can then tell what elements are in the star, even though it's millions of light years away.
Yeah, exactly. And not just what the elements are, but, I mean, well, we'll come back to this later with discovering planets, but the fact that you can tell how fast things are moving, or in particular whether they're moving towards or away from you, is how we know a lot of things about the universe, including dark matter and including planets around other stars. And so that's, you know, we don't see you don't get it in the images, but you get it in the spectra, and that's you know, a lot of astronomy is, that's the beauty, I guess.
Photometry, what's that?
Well, so photometry just means pretty pictures. I mean, so yep. Whereas spectroscopy is taking a spectrum, photometry means, you know, you take your photo and you measure the brightness of the stars on it.
Yes.
You know, so that's your classic.
Now, astronomy has always had a big impact on daily life, particularly in ancient times. And I see you address that here.
Yeah, so so ancient cultures, of course, used the stars to help them do various things. The Egyptians in particular, they used the rising and setting of Sirius to determine the times of year when they should plant crops and things. Of course, Stonehenge was used to predict eclipses.
To the ancients, of course, if you missed the planting season, it meant starvation.
Well, exactly, and, you know, the stars, give you very good ways of doing things. I mean, navigation in particular. I mean, hopefully most of your listeners will know how to find south from looking at the Southern Cross. That's when they're lost in the desert and they need to head to Antarctica.
Yes. Okay, telescopes. There are two different types of telescope, aren't there?
Well, there's many different types of telescope, but there's a couple of sort of classic designs, if you like. I mean, the traditional telescope is, you know, two lenses in a tube, and that's your refracting telescope. But there's a limit, basically, to how big you can make that before it distorts the light too much. So most large astronomical telescopes are what's known as reflecting telescopes. So instead of your two lenses, you've got a mirror at one end, which is... So the largest telescopes in the world now are sort of 8 to 10 metres in... Which, if you think about the size of that mirror, that's a lot bigger than your bathroom. So these things are really huge. And the next generation of telescopes are going to be what's called the aptly named extremely large telescopes, or there's the, which is following on from the very large telescope. And there's also one called the Overwhelmingly Large Telescope, or OWL. But these are going to be... That's really where it's too big to be one mirror anymore as well. So those... the next generation of telescopes are going to be made up of sort of hexagonal little mirrors that you can adjust all in sync to get the effect of one big 30-metre mirror. But so currently our best is around 8 or 10 metres.
Yes, we're talking optical there. Now, radio telescopes, of course, are a lot bigger. Now, why is that?
Oh, of course. Well, so it's simply just the fact that the light is of longer wavelength. So to get the same resolution in the images, then you need a much bigger collecting area. And, well, so as you'll know, that radio telescopes can be spread across whole countries. There's one in the UK called Merlin, which is spread across the whole of the UK. And Australia has traditionally been very big in radio astronomy. And Australia is the prime site for the mother of all radio telescopes. It's going to pretty much cover Australia. It's called the Square Kilometre Array. It's a billions of dollar thing.
Now, we're supposed to be in competition with South Africa for that.
Oh, it's very
You've got any news on the inside running on that?
I don't have any inside details, but I think we can be pretty confident that Australia has a good history of radio astronomy. I think what it's currently up to at the moment is building demonstration instruments to show that. There's a thing called ASCAP, which is the Australian Square Kilometre Array precursor. So if we show that we can do it, and we can do it well, and that we can do it without too many problems, then I think we'll be in a good chance.
Yeah, and that will put Australia right in the lead then of radio astronomy, wouldn't it?
It'll be superb for Australian astronomy. That the last really big thing that we've invested in was the Coonabarabran, which was built in the 80s, the Anglo-Australian Observatory. And and that's a 4-metre telescope, and it's not on a terribly good site. So it's not... it's still world-class, but it's not the world's best anymore. There's much better sites, and there's much better telescopes for doing astronomy. Although people have done very creative things with it in recent years. But, yeah, something like the Square Kilometre Array, which is just, world-beating in all its aspects, will just put Australia back on the map for doing astronomy.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show, Daniel.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks.